I'm going to start off with an idea, I think, in Parshat HaShavua, because I think it's very important to mention this, especially in these trying times, and especially in trying times that add on to trying times and difficult situations like making Pesach, which is supposed to be a happy and festive and lovely holiday. And it's not easy for many of us. Some of us are in quarantine. Some of us are elderly and cannot have the Pesach we're used to. Some people haven't made Pesach ever. I was supposed to be on a trip to a hotel, and people said, I haven't made Pesach in 30 years. I don't want to make Pesach. It's like, so I want to start with something very important. And I'm happy to take questions in the, as we continue on. After I give my idea, we'll discuss as much as we can in detail, kashering for the mitzvah, kashering kitchen for Pesach, kitniot, mechirat chametz, and I'll try to focus on the complex situation a lot of us are in. This week we begin Sefer Vayikra, the third Sefer in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Vayikra talks about sacrifices, talks about Beit Mikdash and sacrifice, that's the beginning of the Sefer. The pasuk, the second pasuk, the first pasuk, the second pasuk in the Parsha says, Adam ki akriv miken, mikem korban lashem. Somebody who brings his own animal to give a sacrifice to Hashem. And the question comes up, what does it mean, your own animal? Of course it's your own animal. Come along and say, Chazal, Adam ki akriv mikem velo me'ageza. Meaning you can't steal an animal to go give a sacrifice in Beit HaMikdash. That's what our sages explain on that pasuk. The Kli Yakar is dumbfounded. The Kli Yakar, one of the medieval parshanim, says, I understand, you're going to give a sacrifice in Beit HaMikdash. You're doing the holiest thing possible. You're going to give a sacrifice on the holiest place in the world to God, and you steal a goat? What's going on? The Kli Yakar explains that the pshat of Chazal is much different than it seems. There are those who sin, who transgress God's commandments day in and day out, and they know they're wrong. They say to themselves, you know what? I'm going to make it up. I'm going to make it up. I'm going to use the extra money that I steal. I'm going to use the extra stuff I have left over unless I need it. I'm going to give a sacrifice to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't use me as your safeguard. Even though you do, you don't do things correctly, you want to bring, you're not going to steal a korban. You're not going to steal money to give a sacrifice. You're going to have some money left over because you cut corners in your business. Don't use me as your excuse, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Adam ki akriv mikem velo me'ageza. That's considered geza. The Kli Yakar is saying that korbanot and this idea of Beit HaMikdash is coming to the deepest part of who we are. Korbanot, the most essential part of it is intent. That's the pshat of the Kli Yakar. And by when somebody learns in depth the halachas of kodshim, intent is so much involved in sacrifices. If the Kohen has the inappropriate intent and doesn't think of the person who's supposed to give the korban or when and how to eat it, the korban is possible. Kodshim, kedusha, korbanot talks about intent. Why am I saying all this? I got a phone call last night. Somebody said, Rabbi, I don't know what to do. How am I going to make this Pesach? And I started saying, well, you know, there's, you know, the kidney thing. And the Kashi said, no, no, no. My sons don't have white shirts for Chag. We're used to a reality where we have gigantic Seder tables with 30 or 40 people. We have nice dishes. We're able to make all the food we like. We have our grandsons and grandchildren and uncles and aunts. And my grandfather runs the Seder and my brother runs the Seder. And we have the nice haircuts. We get the nice clothes and the jewelry. However, this time of year, this year specifically, those might not all be possible. Kadosh Baruch Hu may be telling us, maybe in a very deep level, that celebrating Pesach this year is about intent. When we sit down at our Seder table, whether it be by ourselves, with our spouses, with close family, maybe the food's not the same food. Maybe the environment's not the same environment. Maybe we might be in quarantine. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at our intent, at our heart, at who we are. And that's a real Seder. That's a real Vigat Levincha B'yom Hazeh. That's the way we keep Seder. Even though this year might have the same thing, might have time to make all the fancy dishes that we used to, we might have all the opportunities, it's still Pesach. You're still telling the story generation after generation about what Pesach is. So I think it's important to hear from everybody that even though Pesach might be different than it normally is, we're still doing the greatest opportunity, the greatest Chag. We're doing it the right way, however we can, whatever medians we have, whatever resources we have to do it, we're doing it right. So I'm going to start off with, as much as I possible, the cleaning and kashering for Pesach. If you have questions during, I can try to answer, but I'll see how we go along. So I'm going to start out about cleaning for Pesach. It is prohibited to have chametz in somebody's ownership or area on Pesach. There are two reasons for it. One is that there's a prohibition that you might eat it. I mean, even chametz that you have that's small, you might come along to eat it. The other problem is owning the chametz, right? Lo yareh v'lo yimatzeh. So you have to clean all the areas where chametz might be. And we're going to go through slang, and I'll try to mention the unique case we have here. If somebody has a backyard, so in your backyard, if nobody's there, you normally don't have to go clean it up, because what happens is the animals come and clean it up. There are animals that come along and clean this stuff. There's no reason to clean the back or front yard of chametz. However, it is still, if somebody puts out chametz there to rot, or just puts out there on the 14th of Nisan, on the next Tuesday, there it has to be clean. I mean, if you have chametz that you specifically put outside, and they put it in the garbage, it has to be clean. If you have a machsan, a storage room, or some kind of attic or something like that, that also doesn't need to be clean for chametz if you don't put chametz there. I mean, the basis of cleaning for chametz are places where chametz normally is going to be there, was going to be. If you have when it comes to chairs, so normally our table and chairs, we have to try to tidy up normally, they're very clean. What needs to be clean is if you have a child or a grandchild or a great nephew and you have a baby chair, those are always full of chametz. You have to take them apart and clean them as much as you can. It's very, very important. Parents who have kids who are young, normally try to clean the pockets of certain clothing. I don't think you have to check every single one that might have stuff inside. Now, a difficult question this year that I'm getting a lot of questions about is regards to what happens if I have chametz that fell behind my fridge or chametz that fell behind a pantry. So the Gemara gives an example, something called a mapolet, where a bunch of rocks fell on food, and because you're not able to get to it, even though it's a big piece of chametz, you don't have to do a bdika and biur, it's enough to do bittul. So in an area where you have a large house, and there are chametz that's hidden in all kinds of spaces, and normally you have your son or friends, or you invite somebody to come clean up and remove those places to get chametz, this you don't have to. Because if you're physically not able to go under your library or behind your kitchen or behind your fridge, and that allows you to do bikkul, and it's enough. So normally if you come and clean up crazy places, you have somebody come clean up your house, and this you're not able to have somebody because you're either in quarantine, you can't have somebody go over and clean, you're not having your kids come help you out. So the areas where you're not even able to get to anyways, behind the fridge and under certain places, you do bittul, and that's enough. Just to go back, I didn't mention that in order to constantly the mitzvah of bir chametz, we do two things. We burn the chametz, we annihilate all chametz in our area, and we do something called bittul. We cancel, we nullify in our hearts the chametz. Chazal felt that you nullify your chametz, midoraita from the Torah, you're fine. Midirabbanan, rabbis instituted that you have to still do the cleaning and burning of the chametz, because we're concerned you might eat something. But since here, where the chametz might be under the fridge or way far away, you can't get a hold of it anyways, you can't even physically get there, so bittul would be enough. Now, I'm going to go a little bit more into dishes, and we're going to go into kashrut for Pesach. With regards to kalim, so any dishes that should have chametz in them should be cleaned. I mean, if you have dishes or pots and pans, they all should be cleaned before Pesach. Should have no chametz on them as well. The question is that, what do you do about kashrut for Pesach? This, normally, we have, there are three situations that people are in for Pesach when it comes to dishes and pots and pans. Number one, they go away. So they put their house, they close up their house, and they go away, and they have their hotel or their inn or their family make them Pesach. Number two is they have special dishes, pots and pans for Pesach, which is very ideal. Or number three, they do something called Hagalat Kelim. In Israel, it's very common that a couple of days before Pesach, the Rabbanut, the municipal Rabbanut sets up stations to put in hot water your dishes or do blowtorching to certain pots and pans and so on and so forth. However, this year, it's not going to be possible because nobody's going to allow anybody to go outside with 10 or 15 people and do Hagalat Kelim. So what do we do? We have to go over what is kasher and kelim for Pesach, what needs and what does need to be kashered. In addition, after that, we're going to go into what can you do practically. So with regards to kashering dishes and kashering pots and pans, let's start off. The way a food is absorbed in a dish, in a pot, in a microwave, in an oven, is the same way it releases it when I when I do kasher. I kasher a dish the same way that it normally absorbs the flavor of the dish. So if it absorbed in heat and water, I use boiling water to release that flavor. That's kasher l'pesach. If it released in fire, I have to use fire. Now, when it comes to releasing in fire, there are two types of kasher. There's something called libun kal, which is using fire on a direct fire on a pot or a pan. Well, you don't really need it, but for a dish, like a pot, you use fire, like a skewer. And this is called libun chamur. Libun chamur is basically using intense amount of heat to burn everything possible. And then what happens is basically it becomes so red, the dish, that comes like a coal. So halachically, we don't do libun chamur today. Why? Because we're concerned that people are going to be scared. They're not going to do it correctly because they're scared that the racks or so on will break. So we do what's called hagala and libun kal. So there are certain things that hagala, hot water, and libun kal work. And there are certain things that only libun chamur can be done. And we'll talk about them slowly. In addition, there are certain things that even if we use them only once in a while for hot things, they still need to be kasher hot. How do you do Haggalah? So you take a chametz stick pot in your house, the largest pot you have. You let it sit for 24 hours. You boil hot water in the pot. You let the pot boil. It has to be bubbles coming out. And then what you want to do is, as the bubbles are coming out, you want to put in either your cutlery, your cups, your dishes, certain things like that. Those all can be done Haggalah to for Pesach. You put hot water in them. Anything that's used with water or dishes or something like that, that can be done in the Haggalah. You pour cold water off after them, and then they're fine. How do we kasher what's more complicated, like the gas or the oven for Pesach? So the oven is a big question. If you have what's called a self-cleaning oven, which is, they call it in English, pyrotech or pyro something. So those self-cleaning ovens use a very special system that completely kashers the oven no matter what. If you have that, you can put in your racks and everything in your oven, your racks and your pans, the baking pans, in your oven. You turn your oven to the self-cleaning. Everything there is kasher l'Pesach, even if it's been used in 24 hours. However, many people don't have self-cleaning ovens. So what do? So some say you have to libun chamur. You have to usually blowtorch the entire oven until it becomes nice and crispy and hot and red. However, that's impossible because you're going to break your oven. So some say you should buy a small toaster oven for Pesach. There are many posts who disagree. Some say you can do libun kal. How do you do libun kal? You clean the rack and inside the oven as much as you can, including the glass door, which is very complicated. You clean it as best as you can. You put in your rack inside, and then you put it on to the highest amount for 20 minutes, and then you kash your oven for Pesach. All of that works when it comes to the rack. However, the pans for Pesach, the pans themselves, they can't be kasher for Pesach, because what happens is when I have cookies or I have direct food on that pan, even if there's a light baking sheet, that can't be kasher for Pesach. So if you have a self-cleaning oven, you put the racks, you put the pans in the oven, then that keeps it going. But if you do libun kal, it doesn't help with the racks. So that's how you kasher your oven for Pesach. With regards to your gas, your coils, your stovetop, so there's a machloket between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam says you have to do libun, and the Shulchan Aruch says enough to do do libun kal. Today, many people can feel that because there are certain reasons to make it, we can do something called libun kal. What you do is you take the burners off. If you have open gas burners, if you have covered glass burners, you clean the glass and you pour hot water over it. Then you turn on your coils for 20 minutes in the highest amount. Make sure that hasn't been used in 24 hours. And that's how you kasher your stovetop for Pesach. If you have the open gas burners, you clean the burners as much as you can when they're cold, of course. You put them on the highest amount for about 20 minutes, and then you've kashered your gas stove for Pesach. Sometimes on the gas stove, there are like long bars that you put the pots on top. So then you should take the bar and put it through the fire on the burn. Be very, very careful. Do that 5 or 6 minutes, and then you've kashered for Pesach. With regards to the rest of the kitchen, so if you have pantries with chametz, you should clean out as much as you can for the leftover chametz, the crumbs, all the stuff, and put all the chametz together. We'll talk about selling in a second. The plata on Shabbat normally always has stuff sip out and fall out on it. So the best thing to do is to clean it as best you can with some kind of very chemical stuff. Afterwards, you should keep clean the plaid as best you can, put it on for about 20 minutes when it's nice and hot. When it cools down, you cover it with tin foil, and you can use that plata for Pesach, no problem. I want to go now to the sink. So sinks for Pesach are a little complicated in Israel because many sinks are made of earthenware, which is hard to use, or shayish not chevroni, or other shayish. So if you have a sink that is made of stainless steel, you can use hot boiling water to pour it all over the sink inside, make sure it's not being 24 hours, and then you can use that for Pesach. A lot of the Israeli older style sinks can't be kosher. So what do? So in this situation, if you buy a rack, a special rack for Pesach, that would be perfect, and put the stuff on a rack, wash in cold water. Some are machir to put the stuff on the side of the put your dishes when they're dirty on some kind of towel on the side and wash them in the air in your sink. Normally, what is recommended to do is to buy what's called sink inserts. You buy these plastic sink inserts and you put them in your sink if they're earthenware. However, this year it's probably more complicated because you can't buy sink inserts. So if you have sink inserts, that's fine. If not, that's not the end of the world. With regards to mixers and blenders, so you have to clean as much as you can. And if they're used with, if they're also using heat, you should, if you use sharp foods with them, you have to do hagal with them. You can put them in the boiling water you did before. Dishwashers is a discussion. I recommend not to pass a dishwasher for Pesach. Now I want to go to something that I got a lot of questions about. Your cars. So those who have cars normally go have their cars cleaned for Pesach, both inside and out. Outside there's no reason. You just want to make your car look good. But the inside of the car, if it has chametz, definitely needs to be cleaned for Pesach. However, this year, there's a concern. Number one is some people don't have the physical ability to go and clean their stuff for Pesach. So you want to clean the car for Pesach. And some don't have, you know, vacuum and so on and so forth. So if needed, you should have somebody come and take out the big piece of chametz. If you have little kids, take out the car seats and clean them as you can. Have somebody, if you're in quarantine, have somebody else clean for you. Worst comes first, we're going to talk about selling chametz, and I'll talk about the car in a second. I'm going to jump to selling chametz because I think it's really important to discuss this issue. I've got a lot of questions about it. I want to discuss it in detail. And I want to try to see if we can make this Pesach much easier for all of us. Normally when we sell, there's the Tosefta. In the times of the Talmud, there was an idea of selling chametz for somebody who went on a boat, drove away and forgot his chametz in his house. However, the real selling of chametz came up about 550 years ago, when Jews were dealing with selling and negotiating and merchanting chametz stick liquor. They would use something called yash. So the poskim wrote 500 years ago, they would sell their chametz because if they didn't sell the chametz, they'd lose their entire panas. They'd have to burn their entire merchandise year by year. So in general, that's how chametz came about. If you have a store or a large liquor connection, you should sell your chametz. However, what we normally try to do is because some people don't feel the machir really works, and some people play with the machir they don't really mean it. So the machira, some people recommend over the years not to sell chametz gemur, not to sell real chametz, to sell only mixtures of chametz, selling wheat and flour and so on and so forth. However, this year, and I'm telling you this after a discussion with Talmud Chacham, people should sell as much chametz as possible. That means if you can sell pitas and crackers and Cheerios and as much chametz as possible, you should sell, and I'll explain to everybody why. The coronavirus occurs and is spread when people get together. Nobody's going away for Pesach this year. And what's going to happen is, especially those in quarantine who won't have the opportunity to get chametz, will have no chametz in their house on Motzei Pesach. As such, I recommend personally that you have to have chametz in your house Motzei Pesach, because you're going to run to the supermarket with 500 people to get pasta and pita and Cheerios for your kids, or you're going to have no chametz in your house because you're in quarantine and you're sick. So I recommend that any chametz you have in your house, real chametz, even though we don't normally sell chametz be'ein, real chametz, pasta, crackers, pitas, you should sell as much chametz as possible this year, as opposed to other years. How do we do this? Now, you can't, normally what will happen is the man and the wife will go to the rabbi and they'll tell him, sell my chametz for me. Or they'll sign a piece of paper and do a kinnah. However, this year, it's not as easy because you're not with the rabbi together. So there are a number of ways to sell chametz. You can either appoint a rabbi and send him your details, and he'll sell chametz for you. I'll be happy to do that. I'm going to try to make a document. The second option is also to add in, to write down in an email the details of in a Google Docs, and then send it to a rabbanut, your local rabbanut or a rabbi from selling your chametz. Now, normally we sell our chametz, we do something called a kinyan. You do a kinyan sudar as a form of purchase. It's called gmirut dat. It ensures you really want to sell. There are two ways to get around this year, because you can't do it. Either when you write in your email, or you tell your rabbi you want to sell your chametz, you tell in the email, I've had somebody do kinyan sudar. How do you do kinyan sudar? You take a handkerchief, somebody else, and you pick it up in front of somebody else and show them that you did the kinyan. That's called kinyan sudar. Or you write in the email, I understand the severity of all this, of this sale. I know what it means. I know that the non-Jew can come and take the food when he wants. And then I sell all my chametz. I recommend not selling through the internet, meaning sometimes the internet sale doesn't really seem like it's really real. Send it either to a rabbi or to an email to somebody you trust who will sell all your chametz. What do you do with the chametz? Ideally, if you have chametz, it should be put in a box that's separate and put in a separate room that you don't use. And then what you do in the mechir is you sell the land under that, you sell the machsan, you sell that area, so it's a real, real sale. So if you have like a storage room, you can sell it. If you have a attic, if you have it outside, if you put it by somebody else's house, it's not there, you can drop it off and put it outside, have somebody take it, that's ideal. However, with frozen pitas and so on and so forth, it gets a little more confusing because you have pitas and so on and so forth. So if you have somebody else who has a freezer who's selling chametz, you know somebody who's not in their house, and you can have drop off or put outside your frozen pizza and have it in their fridge or their freezer and come, then that would be ideal. If not, you can close in three bags your frozen chametz. You write down a list of chametz. You write in the mechira, I have four bags of frozen pita in my freezer, and you sell the chametz. It's not ideal, but I think it's so important for people to sell as much chametz as possible. And to really mean the mechira, I never sell chametz. I've never sold chametz. This year, I'm selling my chametz. So I'm not trying to beat around the bush. That's what I recommend this year. And that'll make the cleaning much easier. Get all the chametz together again and try to sell as much as you can. In your sale of chametz, it's very important you specify. You have to ask the person who's selling this, because it's a big concern. There are certain sales where they sell your pots and pans. Because they say that there's chametz in the pan to swallow it up. That's a grave halachic mistake, because then you have to tovu all your kelim all over again. So make sure when you're selling, you want to ask the rabbi, please do not sell my pots and pans, because then you're going to come back to me for the mikvah all over again. The same question with the mikvah arises when you have pots and pans and dishes that need mikvah, need to be tovu in the mikvah. It's mitzvah d'oraita, that's in the Shulchan Aruch, and you're at Deah 120. However, we know we can't go to the mikvah sometimes. Because first of all, the mikvahs, at least the dish mikvahs, are sometimes very dirty, and we're not supposed to leave our house. So in great need, if it's very needed, Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe, in very, very grave situations, that you can use these, you can use the dishes one time only, or for Pesach if you need to, and use them without going to the mikvah. However, I would make sure you put a sticker on them afterwards that they're not tovel, and make sure you tovel them next year. So that would be the questions of toveling chametz. I'm going to go now a little bit to kitniyot, and then I'm going to go into a little bit more of the of toiletries and cosmetics and some of that stuff as well. So kitniyot is a very important minhag. You'll see it this week in Torah Tidbits. I wrote about it in detail on next week as well. Kitniyot was accepted in Ashkenaz over 700 years ago. It was accepted in minhag, and we should keep it. The reason of kitniyot are two concerns, two halachic reasoning. One is Chazal were concerned that the legumes that used to be grown and stored and mixed around with grains, we're concerned there might be grains in the kitniyot, which, by the way, I have somebody who said he saw with his own eyes, there was some piece of grain left in a bag of rice, and then there might be chametz. The other reason is that we use kitniyot to ground up. I see people asking questions, so I'm going to have, if Zmir is here, somebody to unmute people for questions soon. We're going to have time for questions hopefully at the end. I'll give a lot of time for questions. With regards to kinyot, so the other concern is that they used to grind up these legumes into flour and make them for bread and baked goods. We're concerned you might get confused between kinyot and wheat. So what are the basic kinyot? So I have a list here in front. It's going to be actually in Torah Tidbits. I'll try to put it up later, but it's, let me just see if I get on my computer. Hold on 1 second, everybody. I'm sorry to take your time. 1 second. Hold on a moment. Okay, so the classic kidney oat are, so beans, cassia, caraway, cardamom, chickpeas, corn, fennel, lentils, millet, mustard, poppy, canola, rice, sesame, snow peas, sugar snap peas, soybeans, and sunflower are all kidney oat. So with regards to those things, you shouldn't have them on Pesach. There's a big question with regards to peanuts. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote years ago that we can only, the only kidney oat that are prohibited are the original kidney oat, meaning the original kidney oat are ones that were in the time of the Minha. However, peanuts were not, they came much later. So peanuts are allowed to be eaten on Pesach. Rav Moshe Feinstein himself mentions that peanuts, there is a minhag not to eat them, and the OU felt to uphold that minhag. That's why peanuts are not eaten on Pesach. But however, according to this Rav Moshe's logic, what about corn and soybeans? Because corn and soybeans are also New World crops. They're also weren't in the time of the original Gzeir of Kitniot, and we still consider them Kitniot. So the answer is that peanuts, they're not normally used like wheat. You don't grain peanut flour as much, and they're not always grown near wheat. However, soybeans and corn are considered kidney yot par excellence. That's why we keep it. Corn and soybeans are still kidney yot. I wrote an article, you'll see it soon, about quinoa. The OU does allow quinoa on Pesach, as long as it has a hakshara for Pesach. Hakshara for Pesach. And because quinoa, we felt that there, it's not like, it's a New World crop, and there's no previous minhag not to eat it, and it's not used normally, was not traditionally used to make flour, and it is grown in the mountains separate from wheat, so quinoa you can have. The question arises now with since quinoa is a minhag, there are many kulas that need to be valued, and I'm going to talk about them slowly now. If somebody is sick, not dialysis, if he has diabetes or any pre-existing condition that he can't eat potatoes or he can't eat certain foods, he's allowed to have quinoa on Pesach. I had a call last week from somebody with diabetes and other questions who have, you know, another eating issues. So if they really need to have quinoa, they're allowed to have it, especially in the situation where it's very hard to get certain foods. There is room to eat in certain cases. I would ask a rav, or you can call me personally afterwards. The other question is with regards to little kids. Normally, if we have a gigantic oshara that we can go to, which I'm not sure people are going to want to go to this year, you can buy all kinds of fancy things, no problems with quinoa and so forth. Today, it might be harder to find. If you can find everything that has no chashash kinyot on the ingredients and it says lo chashash kinyot, then you should for sure eat them. However, sometimes with little kids up to age 5, you know, you're very limited because you can't buy certain things. So up to age 5 or 4, I think there's room to definitely give kinyot. In fact, baby formula and baby mixes on Israel are all have kidneyot, and they're allowed because of little kids. So that would be allowed to have kidneyot. The question arises with regards to oils. So the dispute amongst poskim with regards to oils, if kidneyot legume oils are asur on Pesach, we hold the lachadi that they are prohibited. So you shouldn't have corn oil or peanut oil or preferably canola oil. However, there are some people allowed canola oil if there's nothing else to buy, and that's a question that should be looked at each case for its own. Somebody asked, I just saw now, with regards to the burning on chametz for Pesach. I should clarify, I said to sell as much chametz as possible. However, you should always leave the 10 pieces to do the mitzvah of tashbitu. I forgot to mention, I apologize. You sell as much chametz, but you put a piece of bread or a couple of pieces on the side. You said, this will be my chametz I will use on a beer chametz and bedikah. You should still do the bedikah. Those who find it hard to go all around the house, I would not, you know, it's a nice minhag to spread it out and look at all crazy places. I would put it in general places where you can find it inside 2 bags, and that's enough. The bdika should be done as, you know, as well. You should really do bdika. You should go in the rooms and check out the kitchen, make sure everything's fine. But you should be careful about the 10 pieces. How do you annihilate for Pesach? If you can burn Pesach on your own grill, we're going to talk about it in a second, on your own grill at home. If you can do it with your own grill at home, and then not use your grill for Pesach, that's fine. However, people want to use the grill for Pesach, we'll talk about in a moment. So what you should do is you should put the chametz in some kind of plastic bag. I would pour some chemical on top because that's called the gom ta chametz, and that's the mitzvah of beer. I would wrap it up, and if you're in quarantine, have somebody put in the garbage for you. I think it's important. And that's burning chametz for Pesach. That's absolutely fine. If you can't burn it, that's what you should do for Pesach, and that's how you should get rid of your chametz. I wanted to mention before the cosmetics, I forgot about 2 other things that were kashrut for Pesach. The barbecue and the countertops. So if you have granite countertops or what's called shayish chavroni, which are very thick stones, that they can be kashered by Haggadah. You clean them very well, and you take a boiling hot water from your kumbo that's still boiling, and you pour it all over the shayish, and then you don't have to cover. There is a minute to cover anyways. In many situations, I recommend, because people have gotten very hurt, if it's too much to kasher your counter, it doesn't look so bad. You take thick tinfoil, if you have it at home, and you cover all the countertops. Rav Belsky, the posting used to say that if you go to somebody's house, there's no shiny aluminum foil blinding you from all the counters. It's not Pesach. So if you want to kasher the granite, you can. However, it's sometimes too complicated. I would just cover. Some people cover and kasher. I still don't understand the logic of kashering and covering. You have to clean it and cover it for Pesach, and that's fine. The barbecue for Pesach. So if you have a gas barbecue, you should clean it very well with very powerful chemicals. You can put the grill on for 20 minutes, and it should be fine. However, it's recommended that if some people say if you put buns, if you heat up your buns on your grill on a regular part of the year, then you can't kasher. Basically, you need libun chamur. So if you do that, some say you shouldn't kasher your grill at Pesach. Some people say you still can. I personally, when I have a gas grill, I do not heat up buns directly on the grill, so I don't have that problem. Going back to the oven, by the way, it's much easier to kasher your oven for Pesach if you don't put anything directly on the rack. Some people heat up pitas for their kids' breakfast or for themselves on the rack itself. It's not recommended to do so. All year long in my house, I cover with a thin piece of, every couple of weeks I change, a thin piece of aluminum foil all year long on my rack for in my oven. So it's easier to kasher my oven for Pesach, and I can kasher through Livun Ka. Now, with regards to cosmetics and deodorants, and so on and so forth. So in general, it goes like this. Bleach and cleaning materials that are dangerous, that have poison and corrosive, these really hard things on them, do not need to be kosher for Pesach, because chomet that is not edible to a dog, and whether it's dangerous for you to eat it, does need kosher for Pesach. With regards to disposable stuff, also, disposable pans does not need to be kosher for Pesach. The concern comes along when we talk about deodorants and perfumes and also hand soap. So there's an idea, according to, in general, they do not need to be kosher for Pesach because it can't be eaten, but you're benefiting from them. So some say they learned from the Gemara regarding Yom Kippur that sicha d'shtir, when you lather yourself in something, it's as if you're drinking. That's why in Yom Kippur, some say there's the additional prohibition, not only drinking and eating, but also lathering and rubbing yourself in. However, many poskim don't hold to this, and I think it's always be machmir. If you can find out if your deodorant and your cosmetics are kosher Pesach, that would be good. In a situation where you can't, and you can't leave your house, there's definitely room to be able to use the cosmetics you have now. With regards to dishwashing soap and lotion, the same thing. If you can go out and get dish soap that's kosher, some that doesn't have kosher Pesach, it's recommended. Again, in the situation where if you can't leave your house, it's hard to get them, your dishwashing soap is fine. However, there's a big however. The bottles that you sometimes use to, the soap dispensers that you use in your kitchen, and sometimes the soap bottles, they very often have comments on them, because you sometimes put the sponge directly to the dishwashing stuff. So I would take out a new bottle for Pesach. If you have in storage or you have extra, you take it out and use it only for Pesach, because those will be used. That's why, of course, you have to change your sponges for Pesach. You have to clean the faucet for Pesach. Those are the things that you obviously have to change as well. Any food product that says kosher to Pesach, however it's been used during the Chometz Dik time, should not be used for Pesach. That includes certain spices and so on and so forth. If you're sure that it's not touched chametz, and you're almost convinced about that they haven't been, you know, touching chametz, I think you should ask the rabbi on an individual basis and maybe able to use it for Pesach. That's very important. With regards to milk, eggs, chicken, beef, so it goes like this. This year is more complicated because I got a call yesterday from the makolet that they're only allowing to buy one packages of eggs per person. I hope there's no shortage, but hopefully we'll be fine. Normally what we do all year is knowing what we do now is the milk and eggs are kosher l'Pesach and Shavuot. They're not chametz. However, they feed the chickens and the animals, that the cows, they feed them chametz. And there's a discussion amongst halachic authorities, how do we qualify that as a direct a benefit from chametz? Not a benefit from chametz, there's a ramah, there's a shop. So some say that you have to be mafmir because it's hana. So if it, all this is with regards to buying milk and eggs and meat on Pesach. However, there are many reasons we make out today as well. Number one is that when our grandparents, my grandparents, used to buy a lot of eggs before Pesach. And a lot of beitzim, a lot of eggs and a lot of milk before Pesach. So if you buy them before Pesach, you should be fine. Even if you should buy them ahead of time, if you have leftover in your fridge, they're still fine to use on Pesach, as long as they've been covered. The milk and the meat as well. If you need to go out and buy the milk and eggs for Pesach, and on Pesach itself, meaning you, a whole month, you have nothing left, you can buy them, you'll find kosher for Pesach. But if you're not able to, if you're not able to buy so much ahead of time, you have some in your fridge, and you can keep them for Pesach, that's considered okay. I mean, even though normally you try to buy it, the halav that says, you know, kasher l'Pesach for Pesach and Erev Pesach, this year under the circumstances, you could keep all your milk as long as it's been closed and your eggs have been closed and your meat that's been closed. The meat's probably all kasher l'Pesach. And that was what you need for all of Pesach long. I want to go back to kitniot for a second. There's a big discussion with regards to kitniot mixtures. So if kitniot mixed with kosher l'Pesach food, if there's a majority of food against the kitniot, it's kosher l'Pesach. So yes, is the stamp on the eggs a problem? No, stamp on the eggs is not a problem. It's absolutely fine. With regards to the mixtures of kitniot, so there's a big discussion with regards to having certain puddings or other foods that are mixed with kitniot additives. So if they've come to give flavor, some say even without a majority, it's a problem. Even with a majority against the kitniot food, it's a problem. So you should make sure that you buy things low chashash kitniot. If somebody is in quarantine, or they can't get certain foods, I would call a rabbi on a certain rebbeim on a case-to-case basis, and certain things that might have kitniot might be mutter to eat, especially for children, where it's very hard to get certain things that we can't get over the year. I'm going to go back to, in terms of kashering not done. I want to open up the floor for a second. Oh, yes, with regards to kashering, all these things, the dishes, the counter, the pots, the gas, the oven, it's always good to leave everything idle for 24 hours. I mean, the kashering process should only be done 24 hours after use. That means the plata, that means everything else from beginning to end. Anything else that anybody has specific questions about? They can send it to the chat and I can try to answer. They're saying, can I mute you? Oh, can a blender, let me open this up. Can a blender or juicer that always used for cold and no shabbat be used for Pesach without kashering? Yes, you have to kasher it. But how do you kasher? You don't have to use heat, you use water. You wash it very well with soap and all the, and everything inside in and out. And that is enough for kashering it for Pesach. Somebody asked about traveling, but I have put bread on my rack in the oven. Can I cover with foil after putting in the oven for kosher for 20 minutes? Yes. Yes, you can. If you do put bread on your rack throughout the year, I would kosher it anyways. Cover the rack with tinfoil as much as you can, and then use it for Pesach. That would be okay. I mentioned the cosmetics. I mentioned mechira. If you need help with mechira and chametz, please contact me offline. I'd be happy to do your mechira and chametz. If there's any more questions, if not, I'll get going. Again, I wish everybody a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I know this is, can a kettle be kashered? Yes, a kettle can be kashered. It doesn't need to be kashered. It's not very hard. I would use what's called citric acid to clean it out, just to get rid of all the schmutz at the bottom. And then I would heat it up again, and that you make it for Pesach. Can we use canola oil? So again, foil and plata, the fire has. I'll get back to you about the fire has on the plata. With regards to the canola oil. So some say canola is kitniot, and that's what we normally hold in OU. If there's dire need, there are those who are mekel. They exist, but some say you should not use canola on Pesach. With regards to the plata and the fire hazard. So I've heard of the issue of the fire hazard. So there are two things you can do in terms for Pesach if you're concerned about the fire. Some people use tinfoil all year long. So you can take that tinfoil off. I would still clean it and put on new tinfoil for Pesach. If you're concerned about the fire hazard, some say you can put on, you can clean the plata as much as you can. I would really use strong chemicals. And then when I heat up my food on Pesach, I would use thin aluminum pans to heat up the food. If you're concerned about the fire hazard, I've heard that it might be fine, but if you're really concerned about the fire hazard, you use the tinfoil pans, and then you heat up the food on top of the tinfoil pans. So he has a grapeseed oil. So grapeseed oil, according to the Chatam Sofer, is not kinyan. You can use it for Pesach. Date oil is also fine for Pesach. Again, sometimes these products have additives that are added kinyan. It's important to look on the label. A lot of you are calling me, they want to order on the internet. They can't see what's kosher and unkosher for Pesach. So you have to ask somebody to help you out. Sometimes in certain areas you can make it. Like if you don't know date honey is kinyan, sometimes it really is only a mixture. But you should try to order stuff that don't have kinyan issues. Any other questions I have, and I'll leave you guys for that. One second, I have some more questions. Date jam without a kosher for Pesach, but new, I have to see the product. When I put Pesach plastic liner in my sink, water still may touch it from the non-kosher ceramic sink below. That's okay as long as it touches from the bottom. If it touches from the top, that's something else. That shouldn't be a concern. When you put in the plastic liner in your sink, just keep the dishes there. Even if it touches the water on the bottom, sometimes it's still considered fine, and that's the best way. Again, if you're concerned about that, you can put dishes on the side and just wash them in the air, and that's fine for Pesach. It says 100% pure date jam, Ceylan honey pure. What about coffee with that specific kosher Pesach? So coffee normally, if it's decaf coffee, it's a big problem. Decaf coffee is very complicated for Pesach. 100% date jam, Ceylan honey pure should be fine for Pesach. If it's regular coffee, we don't normally require hashkafa for Pesach, but many do have. So it's good to look for coffee that's kosher to Pesach. Decaf coffee is really an issue. Many hashkafas, some people give hashkafa where it's not even an easy issue because they use what's called swish washing or whitewashing, which it means to remove the caffeine from decaf coffee, you have alcohol involved, which is a hummus problem. Some say it's not a problem, but we're concerned. So not recommend to drink decaf unless it has a very, very reputable hashkafa. You can find regular coffee that's kosher to Pesach. You do not have to line stainless steel sinks. You can kosher them. You clean them very well. You use your kettle. You pour hot water over them, and then you kosher for Pesach. As long as the stainless steel line is 24 hours and didn't have anything touched on it at all. So that's it. Any more questions? Plastic cover on urn. Can an urn be koshered? An urn can be koshered. I said again, you have to just clean it up and plastic, you clean it up as well as you can. We're not concerned. Many posts can say it's okay. You clean it with citric acid. You heat up the urn till it boils, and then it's kosher for Pesach. Last year, coffee was opened. Kosher Pesach, could I use? I don't know. I think the coffee, if you open it and use it throughout the year, and you have it with bread, I'm not so sure it should be used for Pesach. I would recommend buying something else. If I can't go to Burma, I live in Etrek, how should I dispose it? You put it, okay, so that's a good question. You live in Etrek, you should wrap it in a bag in tinfoil and put it in the garbage. There's no choice. What about the plastic cover of the urn? The plastic of the urn is no problem. You clean it off. We're not concerned chametz is coming on that. You clean the plastic cover as much as you can. There's no problem with the steam that comes out from the chametz stick stuff. You clean it off very well all around with chemicals, good fluids. And then you kosher in the plastic cover and the urn are kosher for Pesach, no problem. I know we can't cover everything. I know people have a lot of concerns for Pesach. There's one more question coming in. 1 second. Oh, there's no more questions coming in. Okay, I think we're good. I know this is complicated. I know Pesach is not easy, but again, if we do Pesach with our real intent, with our hearts, it'll be one of the best Pesachs we ever had. I know it's not easy for everybody. If there are any specific questions, the Center for Kosher Education, the Gustav and Cal Jacobs Center for Kosher Education is open for everybody. Please call WhatsApp with regards to Mechira comments or other questions. Anything I can help you with, I want to help. We want to make this Pesach as happy and as sameach as possible. I wish everybody a Chag Kasher v'sameach.